Why don't you tell us how you got your start in music?
Oh, wow. Well, it was a very young age. My dad, my mum and dad used to play me Paul Simon and Talking Heads and all these kind of bands and stuff like that. And I really took the influence from that throughout my life. I still listen to those records now. And as a, you know, I started guitar at like 14, made a band, thought the band was going to be huge at 15 years old, you know what it's like.
Oh, yeah.
And then, to my surprise, we didn't become famous. And then after that, like, I went to university, met some people, started another band. And after that band stopped, I kind of started doing a Lion and the Wolf stuff. I went through a breakup and just wrote some songs in my room, like you do, recorded them onto GarageBand on my Mac. And then from there on, like, I just played a handful of shows, didn't really think I'd do much with it. And then I kind of thought, oh, this is actually all right. You know, I'm enjoying this. It's easy to go on my own. So I started doing small tours and stuff, but it was only until like last year in January that I decided to actually quit work and do touring full time. So I've toured every month since January last year, just to kind of keep everything going and to build up a foundation. That's basically where I'm at now. Like, we recorded Symptoms last year. It took a year to record. We put it out in November independently, and it's, you know, couldn't have gone better, to be honest. I'm having the best 2 years of my life.
Nice. And I was going to bring that up. I mean, how, like, when you know, when you're at that decision where you are going to change your career to make this your breadwinner, I mean, how hard of a decision is that? And how long did you mull over it?
Well, it took me a little while because I thought, oh, man, I was living in London at the time. And I was living cheaply because I was living with a family friend. In London, which was a godsend really at the time, working full time in London, it was the only way to stay. So I thought, well, what am I going to do? But luckily I had all these tours booked up, and you know, it was kind of a decision that I was kind of decided 100% by my boss at Apple. She was like, just go. She was actually saying, just do it. Like, she heard the record as well, some of the recordings, and she was like, you got to give this a go, and you can always come back. So she's left now, so I don't think I can go back. So, you know, but, you know, it was the best decision I ever made, and I stand by that.
Now, how was it? How did you prepare for it? Did you, like, start, like bankrolling your money and stuff? And, like, did you say to yourself, when I have this amount in the bank, then I'm going to do it? Or did you just, just set a date?
Well, it was the date was kind of set. I didn't want to go past initially my birthday, which was in November, but I had to save some money. Once I'd saved a fair bit, I put that away and went, right, this is the time I'm going to do it. Unfortunately, you know, touring in Europe was pretty, you know, good on the old money side of things. And because I'm touring on my own, you know, it's doubly beneficial. So that the money, basically the Lion and the Wolf is like self-sufficient now as a kind of, not as a business, but as a, you know, an entity, because the tours are getting bigger and they're getting better. And I did have to kind of cut down on certain things, certain like lifestyle aspects, but that's fine. I you have to make sacrifices to do what you want to do.
Well, and a lot of times, don't you realize too that you find out you don't miss it as much, like the little perks, I guess you could say.
Oh yeah, God no, I get much more satisfaction out of playing. Like the little perks were just things like, you know, going to a posh place to get my beard trimmed and haircut, or you know, spending £40 on a haircut rather than £5.
Yeah.
Which I'm more than happy now with, because, you know, like my outgoings are minimal, I guess.
Yeah, because you think of things like, okay, eating out more and stuff, and then you think, you don't really miss it, because then you learn how to cook inevitably.
That's right, and I've become a really good cook over the last year and a half. I can cook a lot better, and I don't eat meat anymore, so that's cheaper too. So, you know, I've got all these kind of little things going on.
Now, how did you lead up, okay, to the day you made the decision up to Symptoms? How was the progression up to that point? You know, when you've got the, you know, the songs written and you're in the studio now, and then you know, how did you get to that step?
As in when we wanted to release it, or when we knew it was ready, or
no, when you had the material and you're now in the studio, yeah.
Well, we basically built everything around an acoustic guitar and me to begin with, because that's how I'd always done it. And the guys, I didn't know them. I only knew the bass player, Rob, who's one of my oldest friends from the Isle of Wight. And the studio's in the hometown, so I went in there with my guitar. We thought we'd write 8 tracks and 2 instrumentals in 10 days. And then we got to like day eight, and the guys were kind of like, look, some of these songs are really good. Why don't we spend a year on it and just make it as good as we can, like, for everyone? Because they wanted this. I was their first project kind of thing in the studio, because they just moved into this house above it. I wanted a full-length, great-sounding album, so we kind of teamed up and we worked out a deal, and I'd spend my time coming back here in between tours, and we'd work at it, we'd chip away bit by bit, and they'd send me all these updates. And one update that springs to mind is when they got in a violin player for the song Perfect Threes, and he lives in Ventnor on the Isle of Wight, but he recorded all the strings on the Star Wars movies and the Beatles records, wow, all of this kind of stuff. And my mind was just being blown. Like, in 2 days' time, I'm going to this secret cinema Star Wars thing in London, where you have to dress up as a Star Wars character and get to watch Empire Strikes Back. That's how much of a nut I am. So you can imagine my delight when I got that phone call.
Oh, nice, nice. Now you brought up a good point when you were talking about putting symptoms together. Let's back up a little bit. You started 2014 like running right out of the gate with all these combo tours. It's brilliant. You started with Rob Lynch, and then you just it just took off from there. How were you able to hook all that stuff up?
Well, Rob is an old friend of mine, and we used to tour together in the back of a Ford Fiesta around the UK. We did a few tours together, became like really good friends, and then he suddenly started taking off in Germany. He got a really good deal out there, and I messaged him and said, look, dude, can I come and open up because I'm quitting work? And he was like, I've already put you forward, kind of thing. I did a 3-week tour with him, and that really set the foundations, because I couldn't believe the receptions I was getting. It was just unreal. Really busy rooms, people would just like come up to you, and I was signing stuff, and I'd never done that before. It was just like completely mad. So that kind of set a foundation up. But when I was back from tour, I would be booking not the next one, because that had already been booked, but the next one. So I was kind of effectively leapfrogging with tours, just getting them all booked up. So I did it DIY for pretty much a year and a half. So all of those tours, you can see all of those dates, apart from the one with Rob, were pretty much booked up flying back.
Now, I mean, and you start, I mean, you started booking festivals and stuff too, right? I mean, because you started getting like, you know, the Isle of Wight, Summer Blast. You even came over here, you know?
I'm coming over there for Fest in October this year. I'm coming over then, yeah.
Now, do you find it, as an up-and-coming indie artist, do you find it better to play the intimate venues or the tours or the festivals?
That's an interesting question, actually. I definitely prefer small intimate venues. They're definitely my vibe, because it kind of suits the sound, I suppose. Like, I've started doing a lot more festivals this year. Like, I did Isle of Wight Festival, I did 2000 Trees, I'm doing Fest, Summer Blast, like you said. But Summer Blast was an interesting one, because I had to play after Defeater. And I don't know if you've listened to Defeater before, but they're a pretty heavy hardcore band, so it was interesting following them. But, you know, I love that. Like, I like the challenge. I like playing anywhere, effectively.
And I like it. I like setups like that, because it's more diverse. I mean, you're not just going to get a bunch of bands that sound alike.
Yeah, and that's kind of, Summer Blast was, without sounding naive or kind of ignorant, it was quite samey in terms of like, it was mostly heavy, aggressive music, which is great. You know, I'm a fan, but like having to go on after all those bands was definitely, like, I think people were like, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, but how did it go? Because, I mean, people don't just like one type of music, I don't think, anyway.
No, that's right. You know, that's the thing. Like, acoustic music often goes hand in hand with heavy, because it's like the yin to the yang, so to speak. You know, like, people like that side of it. It's like the polar opposites. And, you know, there's been lots of transitions over recent years of frontmen from hardcore screamo bands moving across to acoustic, softer stuff. So it does kind of fit in that sense.
Exactly. Well, like, think about it. Like, Paul McCartney last year did a song with Foo Fighters and Dave Grohl. And it was hard. It was almost hardcore. And I'm like picturing, okay, does he have that Hofner bass, and he's like, you know, slamming it into a Trace Elliott or something now, or
amazing,
you know? But out of all the places you played, because I mean, you played numerous countries. what are the differences between the audiences? Because I've noticed too from my own history that, you know, like certain places of the world are a way different audience wise than, you know, the US in my case.
Yeah. I mean, Austria springs to mind because everyone can smoke still in bars and pubs and stuff. So that's always challenging because I don't smoke. So I end up just getting all like wheezy. In Germany, different parts of Germany have different styles of audiences. Like the guy, I can't remember specifics, but there's an area in Germany where they'll really be upfront with you, like just straight up, like, I didn't like that. You didn't play for long enough, but that song was beautiful. You know, like they have this really, really kind of bizarre way of giving feedback. But that's not obviously the whole country. I mean, I love playing in Germany more than anything, but I find that German audiences are definitely the most attentive for sure, and they'll just go out on a whim to a show just to listen to music, which is amazing. I was just going to say I haven't played in the US yet, and I'm hoping to tour there next year, so I'll be really interested to see in if and when it goes, you know.
Yeah, I think you'll find a varied set of audiences here too, depending on which part of the country you're in.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
what's the best? Would you say?
I like New York and Chicago.
Cool.
You know, the reason is because they give you the best feedback and they get the wildest. And I mean, not like drunk wildest, but they react the strongest to the music.
Yeah.
You know, so I would say that. Now, if you throw a bunch of beers in, you know, in a Rocklahoma, then I'll say Rocklahoma, but then, you know, but then that's the, you know, the 80s metal crowd, you know,
right.
You know, so that they're just naturally like that. But what I was going to say about German audiences is not to insult anybody else, but they also seem the most educated. Like they research the bands, mm-hmm. the artists, if they like them.
They do, actually. That reminds me of a time I played in Munster last year, and I only had a half an hour slot. And this family, who have actually come to see me four or five times since, are really lovely. They came up, and I think it was the dad or the mum said, "Oh, we wish you should have played for longer." And I said, "I'm sorry, that's all I had." And I think they thought that I meant all the songs, so that they got out like... She was like, "No, you have this CD and this tape and all of these songs." And I thought, oh my God, like I felt terrible. So I made sure like the following week they came to watch me again.
Oh man.
And I played for twice the time to make it up for them.
That's when you check if the doors just magically locked all of a sudden.
Lord.
Well, yeah. let's talk about your music here. We talked about before the interview about your song Ghosts on Trinity, and it's mm-hmm. a beautiful, beautiful song, and I told you my personal affiliation with it. Why don't you tell the audience how that song came to be and how the accompanying video idea came to be as well, because it's just such a, I mean, it is a gorgeous song. I mean, I said that before, mm-hmm. but there's no other word in the English language for it. I mean, it is gorgeous. You know what, why don't you tell us about the history of that?
Well, the song came together. I wrote it, oh my goodness, it was only a few years ago, but it was about a time 10 years ago when my mother's mother and my dad's dad passed away within a couple of days. And you know, it shook the whole family up. And whilst we were grieving for my grandfather, suddenly my mum's mum died. And so we were grieving for two people, which is obviously very tough. And a lot of crap happened after that, but it got better, which is good. And so, you know, I wrote this song about them, but I kind of wanted to make it not like super droney, super fed up. I wanted to have this uplifting kind of end, which is why we threw in the organs and stuff and the drum beat at the end to make it all kind of epic. And the video kind of reflects that, because I don't know if you saw it, but when it gets louder at the end, it cuts to these like drone shots of Ventnor, which is where I live. So that's where we were, and we did on a very cold January morning, because you probably tell in the video.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if you saw my original review for it, but we reviewed the video a few weeks ago, and let me read it to you now, and you tell me if you agree or not. I've got it as: picture a man on a lonely journey, only the loneliest of journeys. This song is about death. The song is somber, yet in a way uplifting through the music, because death is also about memories, and in the end, that is what we all become. Brilliant song, brilliant music, brilliant musician.
if you could take that as my answer, that would be brilliant. Just flip that around and have that as what I just said. That'd be ideal.
But
that's awesome.
Does that capture what what the song is to you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's why I always like playing it, because it is about memories, and you know, we're playing in that church where we held my grandfather's funeral. We're playing there in 3 weeks, full band. So we're going to use the organ in there, and you know, we're going to play that. We're going to play that song, and hopefully, we're going to film it. Actually, so.
Oh, if you film it, you've got to send me a copy of it.
Sure, man. Yeah, of course, no problem. Yeah.
I mean, this is one of my top five songs for 2015. Out of all the hundreds of songs that I have played on Jammerzine, like, this is in the top five.
Thanks, man. That's right.
So, but I mean, well, you know, as much as it touches me as a listener, you know, how hard is it for you as a songwriter to get a song or a piece of music to that level, to where it's not only brilliant and beautiful, but it is conveying exactly the message you wanted to convey?
You know what? That's interesting, because whenever I'm writing a song, I never have a set emotion in mind, or a set task, or you know, conclusion or end goal. Like, I never go, oh, okay, I want to be able to people to feel this at this point or whatever, you know, despite what, you know, the uplifting end at the end of Ghost and Trinity, I guess that's the exception. But when I write a song, like, it's only coming naturally. It's never a conscious effort to do one approach or a particular approach. It's always kind of conveyed in the way that I want it to just flow naturally. And that's, I think, reflected through the entire record, is the fact that we did record it organically. You know, there was barely any digital plugins. It was all done very naturally. And that's, you know, for me, that's an important part of music, is just honesty and integrity.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself, because it comes down to being true to yourself in the end.
Absolutely. Because you don't want to look back at a piece of work and go, oh, I remember when I was writing that and I really wanted it to make it sound like that or that or that or that. And, you know, like, it's just, I'm proud of it. So.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I'm honored to hear it. I mean, and there are so many other brilliant tracks on Symptoms as well. Like, I could think of Bandages and Perfect Threes, Tangled mm-hmm. Tape, Symptoms. Let me ask you this. I ask this of everybody, and I always get the answer I least expect. So I've got to ask you this. Okay, if you could pick one song on this album and the rest you had to throw away and forget about, which would it be and why?
Oh, wow, that's tricky. I'm trying to think of them all. I think it'd probably be November Saints, actually. I like that track. I kind of liked it to begin with, but then we don't really play it live. But recently I've been listening to it, and it always reminds me of my mate Marie, who's like pretty much my sister anyway. So kind of, I'd say that track I'd want to keep. And I think we did a really nice ending on it. And I think there's some really beautiful like guitar licks in there that are kind of hidden, kind of went all soft on the production on that one. But
well, no, it's got a nice flow to it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed that, just because, I mean, it's got the hook. It's got the familiar hook, obviously, but I mean, it also mm-hmm. has a nice flow. I mean, and you've got that in a lot of your music, actually. I mean, and that's not a lot of thing. That's not something that a lot of artists can say, because, you know, there's sometimes where like you listen to a song on an album and you think to yourself, okay, that's filler. You know, that's because the label wanted 10 tracks and not 9.
Right.
You know? So, but I mean, this one, like I hear a, you know, not to sound like a douchebag radio guy, but I hear a single in everything on this.
That's cool.
You know, cool. You know, and that's, you know, and that's a good thing. But I got to ask you, you said earlier you're a full band now. So
yeah, I mean, we are practicing as a full band for a couple of things, like our headline run in Germany and this show in the church in a few weeks. Mm-hmm.
So The Lion and the Wolf as a single artist is gone, and it's a group now, right?
No, not necessarily. It just depends on what tours come around, you know. Like, if we get offered a full band tour, we will try and do it full band. if I get offered a solo tour, then I would do that as well. You know, it's all dependent on what the conditions are. And I'd ultimately like to take it full band because I think, you know, you can, I think with acoustic music, I wouldn't say there's a ceiling on it or anything, but I think I could write another album, but I want it to be full band anyway. So it's a natural progression for me to kind of take it full band eventually.
Do you think it allows you to have more freedom in the songwriting process?
Well, weirdly, with the new tracks, we've been doing kind of jamming, you know, like jamming together, like I'll come in with an idea or a song that's ready and we'll just write together rather than just recording down the guitar in one hit and then building around it. We're kind of recording as we go, like we put these two new tracks, which I can send you soon, actually, if you want. They're kind of... They were live tracked, so the bass, the guitars, and the drums and the organs were all tracked live, and then we added vocals afterwards. So it has this really nice natural flow with no click track or whatnot.
Nice. Now, how do some of these songs on Symptoms in particular translate in a solo show? Because, like when I hear the music, I hear it as the artist interprets it. So sometimes I have a hard time thinking to myself, okay, how would this sound with one guy doing it?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a good point. I mean, the live show is quite different when I play solo. I play just my acoustic guitar. I don't really strum. I kind of finger pick and strum. I play the bass notes with my thumb and, you know, kind of play softly and I sing softly with this big kind of boomy reverb. And this kind of falsetto-y voice. So the songs do translate really nicely across. You know, like I tend to lean towards the softer side of songs when I play live, like Ghost on Trinity, apart from the end, is like belted out. Colour is sung softly anyway. But, you know, the fact is that those songs were originally all played acoustically anyway. So it does work, because I had this thing where I step away from the mic to sing a little bit and that will just pick up the reverb on the mic just enough, and sometimes I'll step back and belt, and I still love playing solo, because it's, you know, if you mess up it's your fault. You know, I think capturing a room when everyone is silent when you play, if you're on your own, it's a wonderful thing. You know, it's a really amazing feeling.
Exactly. Now, being a guitarist myself, I got to ask you the obligatory guitarist questions, because sometimes these are my favorite questions anyway. But what's your gear? What are you playing with?
That's a weird thing, is I don't really know a lot about guitars. I have a Takamine G series that I've had since I was 21. That was a birthday present. And that's it. You know, I use a reverb pedal that I can use with my foot when I'm playing. I'm just on and off, and I have obviously a tuning pedal, but that's it for now. You know, I don't really have any more than that.
You don't have like an acoustic amp or anything? Like,
no, just DI'd straight into the desk. So it's all very, very simple, which is, you know, testament to the fact that I can tour so much on my own, because I can just plug in. It's effectively having like studio quality reverb, and that's why I bought the pedal, because if I play a house show or something and there's a PA, even if it's just the world's worst PA, I can make it sound good just by tweaking a few things.
Yeah,
so that's always exactly fun, and I enjoy doing that.
See, you're so lucky, because like I said, like, you know, like I've toured before and I've got the Marshall full stack in the you know, the cases and everything, and it sucks.
Yeah.
No, because I, you know, here's something funny. I never learned how to properly roll up cables. So the first thing I would do when I get a gig, you know, when we get to a gig, is spend the first hour, you know, untying the knots in all my cables.
Yeah.
You know, but have you ever thought about like maybe like going electric, like kind of mixing it up a bit, or are you happy?
Yeah, I mean, we are. That's exactly what we're doing with the full band stuff. We're playing electric. So it makes it a lot bigger, but it can still be brought down to like a real soft kind of style. And on this tour in October, we'll be taking the acoustic, so I can do like 20 minutes on my own halfway through the set, which is a nice idea. But yeah, like I thought about playing solo with electric as well, but that obviously, you know, without a car, that makes it very difficult. So, I mean, I'd like to do that at some point. I think it worked really nicely.
What you could do, actually, you could not have to get an amp and just get an electric guitar and then get like a processor or a pod.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that'd work. I think I'd feel like I was cheating a little bit though, but
no, they're really good. I cheated last time I went out, so because I got sick of moving stuff. So
yeah.
You know, but
makes sense.
But like I could picture you with a nice like Epiphone hollow body or something, you know.
You know what? I looked at one recently. I looked at a Sheraton. It was £300, like from a mate. But I just at the moment I can't afford it. I've got to pay for this. We're doing a single in October for the October run, and it's a limited edition. I'm only making 250. One track on one side, one track on the other side, plus a free download of like four acoustic songs. So, you know, that is going to be like, that's going to be interesting because we finished them today. We send them off the mastering tonight and it's all good to go.
Nice, nice. Well, what do you guys have coming up then after this new stuff comes out and everything else?
Well, the single comes out in October. We're working towards an album release date for like summer next year. We've written five tracks and four of them are recorded, four of them are recorded, full band. I'm just writing continuously and just trying to get the, I'm in no rush, you know, we have no label, no pressure, nothing to worry about, which is really nice. So we can work at our own pace.
Yeah. And I'm hearing a lot more indie artists say they don't like being, they wouldn't want to be on a label anyway.
That's it. I mean, what you have to ask yourself this question is, what can a label do for you that you can't do for yourself? And if it's, you know, not getting it heard by thousands and thousands of new people and getting them on right tours, then there's no point in doing it. You might as well do it yourself.
Well, and also if you learn to do it yourself, you learn to take care of yourself.
Absolutely. And that's what we did from, you know, November last year. So yeah,
exactly. So where can we find you online?
It's everything's online. It's on Facebook / The Lion and the Wolf, and Instagram and Twitter. It's just at TLATWUK. The stuff on YouTube and stuff, but I guess I use Instagram, Facebook the most, but it all goes through Twitter too. So
it's all Bandcamp and
Bandcamp, yeah, for sure. That's where you can actually pick up the record. I recently put some new garments on there for sale as well.